Shalom, everyone. Welcome to Partners in Progressive Israel, Conversations with Israel and Palestine. Today we're speaking with Professor Dani Gutwein about the logic of occupation. To remind you, Partners for Progressive Israel depends on your support. Though participation in this program is free, we kindly ask for a suggested donation of $10. Let me introduce Professor Gutwein. Professor Dani Gutwein is one of the most prominent public intellectuals of the Israeli left. He teaches Jewish history at Haifa University, but spends much of his time inspiring, building, and supporting a grassroots movement which offers an alternative political vision and action. Few Americans are aware of what is actually happening on the ground in Israel in recent years. The Israeli left is rebuilding itself from within, reconnecting with communities, organizing mass demonstrations against Benjamin Netanyahu's gas deal. They have unionized 150,000 workers since 2008. Think about the significance of this number. It's huge. And they have successfully forced the right-wing government to extend public education to three-year-olds. This is not to say that they have solved all problems, not even remotely, but there are significant successes that the American Jewish public is unaware of. Dani Gutwein is, I would say, the intellectual force behind this mass movement. So first, a few technical matters. All callers are muted while Professor Gutwein is speaking. When we open the call to questions, you will be able to address Dani by unmuting yourself. To unmute your call, you'll need to press *6. In order for us to hear you. Please remember to press *6 again once you've finished asking your question in order to remute your call. This will help us cut down on background noise. Dani, the stage is yours.
Thank you. Hello. Good evening or good afternoon. Here in Israel, it's evening. What I would like to speak with you about is the logic or the economic and social logic of the perpetuation of the Israeli occupation of the West Bank or the Palestinian territories. Let's begin with some political facts. The last elections in Israel that were held last year give us quite a very good understanding of what is happening in Israeli politics. The upper three deciles of the Israeli voters voted, the majority of these deciles, voted for the left, that is to say, Meretz and the Machaneh Tzioni or Avodah or whatever. The seventh decile were voted half for the left, half for the right. The sixth, fifth, and fourth deciles voted mainly for the right, mainly for the Likud. The first, second, and third deciles voted either for the Arabs or for the Haredim. That is to say, the Israeli left, namely Meretz and Avodah, are parties that are representing the interests of the upper classes of Israeli society. And the lower, middle-lower classes voted systematically for the right for Netanyahu. Now, this is the puzzle of Israeli politics, because we know Netanyahu is a neoliberal that has dismantled the Israeli welfare state, that has privatized everything, that has extended the gap, the social gaps, the economic gaps in Israel, and I will come to it in a minute. So the question is, how come that the lower classes or the lower deciles voted for Netanyahu and not for the left, which is only logical that they will do. But they don't. In order to understand this puzzle, and the Israeli commentators are extensively dealing with this question, there are two main answers. One is that the lower classes are irrational. Well, they voted from a plethora of religious, ethnic, nationalistic, anti-Arab motives, and their hatred to the Arabs or their Jewish feelings are covering their rationality, and that's why they're voting from the 70s to the right. The other answer is what I'm going to suggest to you is that the lower classes that are voting for the right are extremely rational, and they are doing what they understand to be the best option that they have in the current affairs of Israel. What is this explanation? Of course, by supporting the right, they are supporting the perpetuation of the occupation. And the occupation is, of course, the settlements, which will be the main thing that I will deal with concerning the perpetuation of the occupation. In order to understand this analysis, we have to understand the basic fact of Israeli politics in the last 40 years is the simultaneously of neoliberal policies and the perpetuation of the occupation. The occupation is not standing alone. Is a byproduct or another facet of Israeli neoliberalism. And in order to understand why there is no political force in Israel that can change this matter, we have to understand what is the meaning of neoliberalism in Israel. The main thing that the neoliberalism has done in Israel is dismantling the welfare state and privatization of the social services, mainly education, health, and so on. Now, what is the meaning of privatization? It's turning social services from civil rights into commodities. Now, the commodification of the social services meant that the upper classes could buy these privatized services with their surplus money, but the lower classes couldn't afford to buy these services. What was the way that the lower classes tackled this problem? They sectoralized themselves. They became sectors. Now, we are very often speaking about it, that Israeli society is divided into Haredim, Arabs, religious, non-religious, Russians, and so on and so forth. But we have to understand that This map of Israeli society was produced by the privatization, because when the welfare state was dismantled, the lower classes, in order to get some of the privatized services, became sector. That means they were organized around a sort of an identity, ethnicity, religion, and use this ethnicity of religion to form a political force. The most known example is, of course, Shas. Shas was formed in the 80s. There was no Shas before the 80s. Of course, the Russians, of course, the Arabs, the Israeli Arabs, you know, Israeli are complaining all the time that the Arabs became more and more nationalistic and so on. But they are doing the most Israeli thing that they can do. They sectoralized themselves. And they become sectors by uniting themselves around Islam or Palestinian nationalism. And through this identity politics, they get political power and try by this political power to get some sort of social services from the state or from private donors. It depends. Now, and this is the story of the Haredim, of Shas, of the Arabs, of course, of the Russians. That's why Israel became, under neoliberalism, became a sort of a confederation of hostile sectors. And the middle class, the Chiloni, secular middle class, is becoming sectorized as well. And you have parties like Yesh Atid, but Meretz and Avodah as well. They're representing the interest, in this case, of the upper classes. Now, one of the main forms or the main sectors in Israel is the settlements. And now I want to speak some minutes about the settlements. When the Likud came to power in Israel in the late 70s, there were in the territory something like 6,000 settlers. That's all. Today we have 400,000 settlers. That is to say that we have a constant emigration of Israeli from sovereign Israel into the occupied territories. And the question is why they emigrate. Now the answer is very simple. The welfare state that was dismantled in sovereign Israel was rebuilt in the occupied territories in the form of the settlements. What the settlements suggest or offer is not an ideology of greater Israel. What they should suggest to most of the immigrants who come to the settlement is good education, good housing, good health, and municipal services, and so on. That is to say, what they can't afford in sovereign Israel, they can afford in the territories. The state that don't give these services in sovereign Israel give these services in the settlement. That's why most of the settlers are emigrating to the territories. There is a gross mistake that saying that most of the settlers are Gush Emunim or something like it. It's a mistake. Most of the settlers are lower class Israelis who left the neighborhood in the townships, in north of Israel, in central Israel, in southern Israel, and went to the territories because they couldn't afford their cheaper housing, they could afford their, they got their better education, and so on. So, from social and economic perspective, I'm not speaking now about all the political problems, from social economic perspective, the territories are the place that poor Israelis or low-class Israelis or lower middle-class Israelis can find the services, the social services, the welfare state or the substitution of the welfare state that they can't find in sovereign Israel. That is to say that like all the other sectors, the settlements has become a compensatory mechanism for lower class Israelis. And this compensatory mechanism is the explanation for the reason why most low class Israelis support the Likud. Because on one hand, the Likud is dismantling the welfare state. It's abolishing its services. It's widening all the time the social economic gaps in Israel. That's right. It's building the Israeli tycoons or the super rich. That's right. But at the same time, they suggest the lower classes this compensatory mechanism of either the sectors of Shas or of the settlements. By the way, there is convergence of these two compensatory mechanisms. For example, Shas, or Rabbi Ovadia Yosef, who in the 70s and the 80s and the beginning of the 90s was held as with the dovish policy, that he preached dovish policies of leaving the territories and so on and so forth. He, in the beginning of the 2000s, he changed his mind and said that Israel should not withdraw from the territories. He has a very interesting halachic explanation for that, but I will give you another explanation. This explanation is that his supporters began to emigrate in mass numbers into the settlements. Nowadays, for example, more than half of the settlers are Haredim, and that's why the Haredi parties in Israel become more and more hawkish and supporting of Netanyahu and that. So we have in Israel this pattern of right-wing policies, of neoliberal policies that suggest the people who suffer from these policies, they suggest them as compensatory mechanisms. Now let's go to the left. The Israeli left has become neoliberal as well. If you see, if you are looking at the history of the Ha'avodah and Meretz parties in Israel, there were great supporters of all sort of privatization. Just to remind you that Yitzhak Rabin, for example, was the great privatizer of the of the health system, of the trade unions, and Meretz, for example, Amnon Rubinstein was the person who was responsible for the privatization of Israeli higher education system. So there is not that great difference in terms of economic and social policies. There is no great difference between the Israeli left as it was or as mainly it is today and the right-wing parties. On the contrary, the left and the right in Israel held neoliberal policies. And that's, by the way, it explains why in the 90s and until 2006, in Israel we had some sort of government of national unity. What was the national unity? The national unity was based on privatization on one hand, and they defer on the future of the territories, but it wasn't that pressing. It was irrelevant for that time. So the governments of national unity were the examples of the idea of the left and the right supporting these neoliberal policies. But what was the difference between the right and the left? That the Israeli left didn't suggest any compensatory mechanism. On contrary, it attacked now the neoliberal policies of the right. And that I can tell you from my own experience with many debates that I had with people in Avodah and Meretz about these same things. Well, they didn't criticize the idea of privatization, of enlarging the gaps. But the left attacked all the compensatory mechanisms. The left attacked the settlements and the sectors. So from the point of view of the lower classes, of the lower deserts in Israel, there is the reality of neoliberal privatized economy on one hand, but there is the right who suggests compensatory mechanisms and the left who suggests nothing. On the contrary, it attacks all the time the compensatory mechanisms of the right. That's why it is very logical and very understandable why the lower classes support the right, because the left, for them, represent the interest of the higher classes who indeed, for the time being, by the way, don't need these compensatory mechanisms. So the left all the time is representing the interest of the upper three deciles. The lower classes vote for the right, and that, of course, give the right the strength to perpetuate the occupation, because it has this massive support, as we saw in last elections. It has this massive support of the lower classes or of the lower middle classes. Now, what is the solution to this problem? I think that what we in what might be called the Israeli social democracy, the new social democracy, and what we suggest is that we have to to have to complement our demand for two-state solutions. We have to complement it with a very strict policies of new welfare state that will give many Israelis, from the poor classes or the middle lower classes and so on, they will give them fair education, fair housing, and so on. And we are doing it also by unionizing. Maya, I mentioned at the beginning of this talk that there is a massive movement of unionizing in Israel, and of course, in some way, this unionization will give a power to some sort of an alternative Israeli left. the problem or the main thing that I think that comes out from what I suggest, from the solutions, from the analysis that I suggest, is what Israel needs is a new left. No, the old left that is speaking about peace now, that is speaking about that waiting to peace in order to correct all the social evils in Israel. On the contrary, we have, in order to gain the support of the lower classes, and this is the only way that the Israeli left will sometime get the power and will form the government. In order to get the support of the lower classes, we have to suggest something that will give them an interest in the left, and that is to say this new welfare state. But, of course, the idea of this new welfare state is contrasted by the upper classes that are supporters of the small of the left. So the Israeli left is held in a vicious circle that it represents the higher class. That's why it is neoliberal. Because it is neoliberal, you have no answer to the lower classes who are supporting all the time the right, who take their support, who use their support in order to perpetuate the occupation and to end this vicious circle. The thing that we have to form, and that's what we are doing in the last years, we are trying to do, is to form a new left and a social democratic left that will suggest an end to this vicious circle of the Israeli left. And by putting an end to this vicious circle, hopefully we'll be able to enhance the idea of the two-state solution and so forth. By the way, this has many ramifications also for Israeli democracy. For as long as Israel occupies the territories, it's undermined the democracy, but this is another story. Maya.
Thank you so much, Danny. This is fascinating. If you would like to ask Danny Gutwein a question, please press *6 now. Please remember to press *6 again once you've finished asking your question. This will allow us to cut down on background noise. Anybody for the first question?
Yes, if no one else will, I'll ask the first question. This is David Abraham calling. The story you tell, Danny, is very persuasive, and it certainly corresponds to things that other Israeli social scientists, Michal Shalev and others, have written, and it also corresponds to the demise of social democracy in all of the advanced countries. So Rabin, in that sense, is very much like Tony Blair and Bill Clinton and Gerhard Schroeder and the rest. We have seen in almost every one of those countries that the right has been the beneficiary of the neoliberalization of domestic economies until confronted with one of two strategies. One that we have seen from liberals in the United States is to try to patch together these identity coalitions. I don't know if that's something that you would see as feasible in Israel. It hardly, the sectors seem too, even more remote from each other than people of color and suburban housewives, et cetera, in the U.S. And the other is to wait for some kind of pushback, which isn't going to happen in a situation of permanent war. Economic considerations seem very hard to push when we must live by the sword forever, is a belief that most people in the country seem to share. I wonder if you could comment.
Well, of course, you're right that this problem is not unique to Israel, and we have it, as mentioned, in Britain and Germany and so forth. As to that we have to live on our sword, this is the ideology of Netanyahu. This is not the ideology of the Israelis. On the contrary, I think that most of the Israelis supporting Netanyahu not because Netanyahu is promising them that they will live by the sword. They're supporting Netanyahu because of the fact that Netanyahu is the personification of these compensatory mechanisms. And I think, speaking in terms of free politics, I think that if the Israeli left would suggest an alternative policy of welfare state, it can get the support of many of those who are supporting now the Likud. For example, in 2006, Amir Peretz was in the head of the Avodah party, and he crushed the Likud in the developing townships in the north and in the south. And in 2013, to a lesser extent, Shelly Yachimovich got some sort of support, or greater support in Herzog, for example, had got, Yachimovich got it in the, in the near periphery. That is to say that when Israelis recognize that the left is suggesting something that it has to do with their interest, they can support the left. And the ideology of Netanyahu, of living by the sword, or all this, ethnic ideology of Netanyahu, of Israel standing alone, persecuted, and so on, and all the things that we know, I think that it is the ideology of the Israeli right. This is not the ideology of the Israelis. And here, I think that there is a large segment of Israelis who can support either the left or the right, depend on the social economic policy that they will suggest. Contrary to what is commonly believed, that the Israelis are voting according to, questions of policy and security, war, peace, I believe that it can be substantiated. Most of the Israeli parties of the last 30 or 40 years were formed on a civic or social or economic agenda. And I could say that except for two parties, all the others, and I think that there are more than 10, were are parties that suggested the Israelis some sort of a civic, economic, or social solution. That's why I'm pretty confident that change in the left has the keys for the change. But as long as we are, we are immersed in the interest of the upper classes, we can suggest it. Take, for example, the social protest of 2011. You saw that 500,000 Israelis went to the streets for 2 months. Saturday after Saturday, they went to the streets to protest against this policy. But why didn't it succeed? Because on the part of the Israeli left, there was not a coherent answer to this protest. So they went and voted for Yair Lapid and so on. So I believe that the change we do not give up anything to complain against the right. The right is very right. Netanyahu and Bennett and all the others, they're doing what they are to find that is suitable to them. I think that from the point of view of the left, we have to change our agendas and to be much more concrete in our commitment to values of social equality, of economic equality, and I believe that this is the way to speak with those Israelis. By the way, Israelis who are living in the settlements as well.
Maya. Thank you.
My name is Dana Ezekiel Clark, and I wanted to say I'm really impressed by your presentation. And I have two questions. One is I'd like you to speak a little bit more concretely about the efforts of the new left, as you call it, maybe by name. I'm following Shelly Yachimovich for quite a while, and I don't see any headways make as far as unionizing, if you could just speak to that a little bit. And also my biggest worry is that the dismantling of the welfare state is so so pervasive, and so pervasive in the media, that how do you go against this tidal wave? I just wanted to mention, I think it was Steinbeck who said that socialism will never take root in America because there's no poor people, there's just temporarily embarrassed millionaires. And it just feels like this is sort of the prevailing narrative that let's, you know, if you can screw someone out of money, this is okay in the vast parts of the population.
Well, these are questions that we are dealing with. To begin with, what I'm calling by this new social democracy, you know, I began to be more active. Well, I know it personally because I was there. You know, in the beginning of something like 2000 or something like it, there were no social democrats in Israel. We were so few, and we didn't have any sort of political power. I think that this has changed. I think that in terms of numbers, we are now. I think that if you see, for example, Amir Peretz and Shelly Yachimovic, yes, they succeeded to get the leadership of the labor movement, of the labor party, because they had got the support of social democrats. Shelly Yachimovic and Peretz succeeded because they were formed from this in the last 20 years, groups. Now, who are these groups? First of all, we are speaking about many middle-class Israelis, because I spoke all the time about, you know, the lower classes. What's happening to the middle-class Israelis is that they are losing their social security. The, you know, people who were used to work in a fairly secure jobs are now some sort of freelancers or something like it. So the Israeli middle classes is undergoing a massive change from a very secured middle class into a very insecure middle class. And the response of some of it, not all of them, but there is the response of this class, the changing condition of this middle class, where mainly, you know, where public work, teachers, nurses, policemen, social workers, and so on. Now they are feeling that they are losing the ground, and here we have a great, we have very massive support. Now we have the unionizing. This fact is, this trend is, you can see it in the growing unionization in Israel. And of course, this is also a sort of power in the younger generation. I can tell you that I, you know, four or five evenings a week, I am talking in one group or another group of young people. And among Israeli, mainly Chiloni, by the way, or secular Israelis, there is a great interest in all these ideas of social democracy, welfare state. And now you have this, you know, last in November, there was the... there was in the Israeli TV a series by the name of The Silver Platter. It was a series of three parts that dealt mainly with the social and economic gaps in Israel. I took part in the third film, and you know, this Silver Platter became an hysteria in Israel. We have got in about, I think that now more than 2 million or something like it, Israelis have shown one of the chapters of the Silver Plateau. Now, this is a phenomenon. You see a graffiti in Israel, have you seen the Silver Plateau? So the Israel is found in this Silver Plateau some sort of a promise. And I think if you are seeing, you know, all these gas protests that we have in the last month, you have many proofs or many indications that something is changing, and Israel has got some sort, mainly among the young people, some sort of, I would call it a social democratic, renaissance. So where you have the youth movement, you know, all the Israeli youth movement, all the pioneering youth movement of the past, you know, the Hanorava Oved and the Machanot Olim and the Shomer HaTzair, have gone tremendous change. And now they're not going to kibbutzim, but they are going and living in the suburbs of Israel, in the poor suburbs of Israel, and the Ayarot Pituach, and so on. And they're getting there, and they're becoming involved in society. I can tell you that among my students, I find great interest in all these things. So this is the, this is the map of this new social democracy. We have it in, I spoke about Avodah, let's speak about Meretz. In Meretz, you have a tremendous, in Israel, you have a tremendous phenomenon of a group that is called Ha'adumim, the Reds. And this group of Ha'adumim, they are young people, mainly students and people of in the middle of 20s, who are a convinced social democrat, and they're doing a great job in merit. So there is a basis, a solid basis for this new social democracy in Israel. We used to have our magazine and so on. So there is a movement. You can say that now the social democracy is once again a movement in Israel. Now, as to the question whether the Israeli middle class will prefer, this new social democracy, or will prefer Netanyahu's promises, this is a question, and it depends on what new deal this new social democracy will offer to the Israeli society. And this is here we stand, and this is the great question of offering the Israeli society an alternative. And I can tell you that one of the great obstacles to this new agenda, to this new deal, is not only the right wing, but these are elements within the left, of the old left, who are, all these, the upper classes. And I think that we are in the middle of this reshuffling of the Israeli left.
Hello?
Hello?
Yeah.
Hello?
Maya?
Yes.
Somebody go.
Yes, we have two people.
Maya, Lily is on.
Hi, Lily.
Hi, and someone else?
Can the other person mute themselves and wait until Lily is done? I'm not sure who was first, but it's, yes.
Okay, hi. Lily Rivlin, and I have to say I am awed by your analysis. I've not heard it before, and I really have to follow up and read you. My question is, how has the Meretz Party, the leaders of the Meretz Party, have they embraced you? And if not, why not?
In terms of politics, I'm working both within the Avodah Party and in Meretz. And of course, I can say with some of the politicians of Meretz, I have very good relations with others. Less, for example, Ilan Gil'on, I'm a great friend of Ilan Gil'on and the others, but it is not a personal question. I think that we are speaking here about movement, this movement of this new social democracy that understands. By the way, I suggest my analysis first in, say it is now 15 years ago, I suggested this analysis for the first time, and since then I try to update it every time to see. Now I update it to understand what is happening with Israeli democracy and so on. I can tell you that in both parties, both in Avodah and in Meretz, I have people who think in the same way. So the idea of reviving the social democracy, I believe both in Avodah and in Meretz, they know that this is the only way. why they don't do it is the vicious circle. And what we're trying to do, what we're working on nowadays to do, is try and break this vicious circle. And I don't know if you can hear from what I'm saying. I'm very optimistic that we are going to do it. Because all the Israeli left didn't deliver. See, we are sitting in opposition for so many years with the same ideas about peace, about a two-state solution, and in Avodah, Herzog on Sunday had announced in the convention of Avodah that the two-state solution is not feasible nowadays, so he has other ideas. And I believe that the thought and that we have to suggest this alternative policy, the social new social democracy, in order not only to rehabilitate the Israeli welfare state, but in order to keep the two-state solution alive. Because we have to understand, we have today in the territories, including Jerusalem, 600,000 settlers. It's 400 settlers in the territories and 200,000 settlers in the vicinity of Jerusalem. Now, the settlers are nowadays are the main force behind the Israeli neoliberal right. The most aggressive Israeli neoliberal is Naftali Bennett. He is more than Netanyahu. He and Netanyahu are the arch enemies of organized labor, are the arch enemies of unionization, of universal services, and so on. So what's happening today is not that the settlers are not only the compensatory mechanism, but by the years they have become the source of power of the Israeli right, and that's why, for example, last number that they have, something of 10% of the members of the Likud party in the last primary they have there, 10% were settlers. And these settlers are organized, so they dictate, and they have interest. The settlers have interest in undermining the remnants of the Israeli welfare state in order that they that people will have to emigrate to the territories or some other compensatory mechanisms. So I believe that the Israeli old left don't have much alternatives, and I believe that in the time it will take time, but not very. I don't think it will take not too long, but it will take time, and they will come to this understanding. So I believe.
Thank you.
Hello.
Hi.
Yes.
Yes, this is Bruce Rosen. I am in New York City. This has been very interesting. I want to say that I looked at that series of videos, and they're wonderful. You've raised a number of questions, but I'd like to focus on two things. Your talk reminds me of a book that was very popular here recently, What's the Matter with Kansas?, on how a progressive Midwestern state was captured by the right and continues to, you know, go through this trauma of a society that pays for nothing and has everybody at each other's necks. One is, to what extent do you or your colleagues see that there is coordination amongst other anti-welfare state groups, say broadly within the OECD and the successor states to the Soviet Union? And what specifically do you get as maybe it's a diversionary thing of what Netanyahu is doing with, say, the gas agreement you mentioned with Greece and with Cyprus, which neither of them actually need gas. They have plenty of sun. So I'm wondering if you can comment on either or both of them.
Well, you see, let's speak about Netanyahu. I think that this is, you see, Netanyahu is very interesting. Netanyahu is very, first of all, is a very clever politician. And he understands, I think that he's fully understand or the idea that the present situation in Israel, where you have the tycoons, where Israeli economy is dominated by a very tiny group of families, which we call in Israel the tycoons, I think that Israel, Netanyahu is understanding that this situation is not healthy for the perpetuation of his or of the right government. And that's why we have in Israel this idea of decentralization and of growing competition among you know, all these sort of Israeli, let's say, not super rich but rich people, or let's make Israel a very promising country for businessmen that will come. So the idea of Netanyahu is trying to make Israel some sort of a country that will make or will depend on a class of not super rich but of rich. Now, how does it connect to the gas? The gas is all the gas question in Israel is something that Netanyahu is doing something that he's not used to. Netanyahu is against monopoles. He don't like monopoles. He has broken many Israeli monopoles. Take for example the cellular monopole. Now, why is supporting the gas monopole? He's supporting the gas monopole because the alternative of gas monopole in Israel is some sort of nationalization of the gas on the pattern of either Norway or the Netherlands. These are the two ways that we have in Israel. Either Noble Energy and Yitzhak Tshuva, that is to say the Israeli tycoon or American tycoons, that will be the owners of the Israeli gas, or in some way that it will be nationalized in some way according to either the Dutch or the Norwegian model. Now, Netanyahu don't want this Norwegian or Dutch model, because I think that what he has in mind is much closer, or the idea of Israel that he seems is much closer to a sort of a very strong government in the terms of the Thatcherite model. That is to say, a strong state that is supporting the upper class. And that's why Israel is becoming more Anglo-Saxon in this, if we differentiate it, or it comes much closer to the Thatcherite model than to the other models of the that we have in the Northern Europe or in Scandinavia and so on. And that's why Netanyahu, as long as Israel, because of the occupation or because of the other things, is getting detached from, I would say, the European countries. And Netanyahu is looking towards Greece and towards Turkey and towards Russia, because these countries, not because of the gas, as far as I can understand, but there is another geopolitical logic to this, some sort of Israeli rapprochement with these countries. It is not the gas, it's the idea of getting some sort of another allies, as long and because we are getting estranged with the European and of course with the Obama administration. So it's not the gas, it's the way that Netanyahu is trying to form new allies or alliances for Israel, and that of course includes India, China in the Far East. So, and that is the challenge of the Israeli social democracy, because we are looking exactly to the Scandinavian model. I think that our ideas of welfare state, of unionization, of trade unions, and the social democratic parties, we look at the Scandinavians, we look at the Podemos in Spain, and to Bernie Sanders, we have great interest in what's happening now in America. So I think that in Israel you have this division between two sorts of politics. That it begins with social economics politics, it goes to one state, two state solution, occupation, etc., and it goes to geostrategic understanding in the macro politics. Maya?
Does anybody else want to ask one more question?
Yes, I would, if that's possible.
Of course, who are we speaking to?
Hello?
Yes.
This is Bob Tabak. I wanted to ask about based the question, especially on following the social protests in 2011. A lot of commentators said that the protests carefully avoided talking about the whole issues of the occupation in the West Bank. So how can... how can that dialogue change from purely economic issues to also looking at that as a factor in how Israel society and economy work? Thanks.
The Israeli, the social protest of 2011 there was half a million people were marching in the streets, or there were many groups. I think that those groups that I believe that they are what I'm calling the new social democracy, we constantly speak about the connection between inequality, dismantling of the welfare state, and occupation of the territories. For us, this is the same question, and we raise this voice during the protest or the mecha'a. You know, in this way, I personally find a great interest in the decolonization process of Britain, for example. Because, you know, Britain made this the process of decolonization in the same time that it built it after the Second World War, its welfare state. So it went out or it it pulled out from India and from the Middle East in the same time that it built its own welfare state. And I think that we raised this voice during the during the protest of 2011. Of course, this was not the dominant voice, but the protest has many voices. It was not monolithic. I think that the press, of course, was centered or emphasized, Daphne Leaf and other people present there, but in the Mechah, among the not the main forces, but within the main forces, there was also our voice of this interconnection of building the welfare state and ending the occupation. We were there. We were not dominant, but I think that from in the last 5 years, this voice has attracted much more attention. I would say that in the Silver Platter, in this television series, for example, I put the emphasis of this connection between the dismantling of the welfare state and the building of the settlement, and it got much attention, mainly by the settlers, by the way, who are very offended, and a lot of discussion has been held straight. So we are a voice, not a dominant voice, but I think that these ideas are getting capturing much more attention in the last years and in the last 2 or 3 years, and I believe that it will that this attention will grow with the time. Maya?
Yes, thank you very,
Hello?
Very much. Yes, somebody else has a last question?
This is Morty Miller from Rhode Island and Florida. Professor, thank you so much for participating in this call. As others have said, I found your presentation and analysis challenging and interesting and very clear. My question is, and you've talked a fair amount about unions and unionization. My question comes from my lifelong career as a union organizer in the United States. And that is, and I was of course, very excited about your report about the extent of unionization that has been going on in the last number of years, and your description of the fight against neoliberalism was familiar and rang very true. My question is, what, if anything, do you think would be useful for American unionists to be doing in relation to the Israeli labor movement, and/or what sort of developments in the Israeli labor movement should progressive American unionists be looking towards? Thank you.
Well, this is a very important question. First of all, you know that in Israel we have, in the last 7 years or so, we have there has been developed a new trade union by the name of Koach LaOvdim, or a force to worker, and it in the beginning it compete with the Histadrut, and now these two trade unions called the huge Histadrut and the newly formed Koach LaOvdim are working, and I think that let me say that what one thing that is very encouraging with all this unionization project is that it is unionization among Jews and Arabs. You know, when you're going to the working places, you find that the driver buses of the newly privatized Israeli bus companies are Jews and Arabs, and I think that in the working world we are finding new Israel, other Israel that has no representations in all these, you know, in the media and in the newsreels and so on. What Americans can help us? I think that relationships should be rebuilt. I think that there has been, you know, in the 50s, in the 60s, in the 70s, there were solid connections between the Israeli trade unions and social democracy and the Americans and the European parties and trade unions. I think that something, this relationship has been weakened, as far as I can understand, in the last years. I think the best thing to do is try and I can help. I can help in it to rebuild this connection, because I think that we need this support and this advice, and we very much want to learn from the experience of other trade unions and social democratic parties. And there is a reason why these relationships have been weakened, because I think that this is the question of what I call the old left and the new left. What happened that all these connections were held with the old left, and nobody took notice of the new left that was rising. And there is one answer to rebuild these connections and to see what mutual benefit and mutual learning we can have and do together.
Thank you so much, Danny. This was an amazing conversation. I think everybody enjoyed it tremendously, and I assume there are many more questions. Partners for Progressive Israel depends on your support. Though participation in this program is free, we kindly ask for a suggested donation of $10. Thank you again. We really appreciate it.
Ta-da.